really to do with my topic, and I'm completely unqualified to speak on this. So I want to try to just talk a little bit about decoherence and the non-emergence of classicality. I have a paper on this on the archive. It's about a month old. This is a slightly improved version of what's in there. Clarifies several things. And let me just give a little bit of motivation first. I'm not concerned with the claim that decoherence solves the measurement problem. I don't think that it delivers a single measurement outcome. That's been a bone of contention for a long time. I am interested in the claim that decoherence explains the emergence of not classicality. I take it you have to solve the entire measurement problem for that, but quasi-classicality. Thus, it the question is why most macroscopic objects behave in a quasi-classical manner. And then there's a related issue about why and whether decoherence gives rise to a preferred basis for use in the context of a many-worlds interpretation. So if you have a quantum state of the universe and you want to parse it into several branches, if you will, if there's a preferred way to decompose it into branches that arises from the process of decoherence. The plan of the talk is brief. I'm going to give a brief overview of decoherence and ion selection with a simple example. I won't spend too much time on that, but it'd be nice to have an example so we could have something in common to have in mind. I want to discuss briefly what classicality or quasi-classicality is supposed to be, because I think that if you don't, if that's left up in the air, then it becomes very ambiguous as to whether decoherence explains it being many different things. Then the focus of the core of the talk, I want to talk about what a typical subsystem of the universe looks like and how it evolves, how subsystems evolve individually and collectively, particularly macroscopic subsystems, subsystems which are supposed to hopefully act in a quasi-classical manner. And I want to conclude by arguing that decoherence does not explain the generic emergence of quasi-classicality from a generic quantum state, much less classicality, but I'm going to leave classicality and the measurement problem off the table. Okay, let me just start with a brief quotation from Zurich and Paz, characterizing what decoherence is. Decoherence is the process of the loss of phase coherence, not surprisingly, by the system, caused by the interaction with the external or internal degrees of freedom, which cannot be followed by the observer and are summarily called the environment. Different states in the Hilbert space of the system of interest show various degrees of susceptibility to decoherence. States which are least susceptible, in other words, take longest to decohere, form the preferred basis. So this is the association of this decoherence process with the emergence of a preferred basis, also known as the pointer basis. Preferred states are singled out by the interaction between the system and the environment. So they're going to be a consequence of both the properties of the system and the way it's interacting with the environment. In this way, environment-induced superselection rules arise, which effectively outlaw arbitrary superpositions. Thus, even though the superposition principle is valid in a closed quantum system, it is invalidated by decoherence for systems interacting with their environments. Okay. Where is my, here we go. Okay, so consider the central spin model. This is an extremely simple model of a system which exhibits decoherence. A central qubit, a two-state system interacting with n other qubits, which we regard as the environment, via the Hamiltonian above. Is this my pointer? I wonder how to use it. Oh, the little red thing. Okay, good. Thank you. The Hamiltonian basically has no free terms for the system and environment variables. It just consists of pairwise interactions between the system and each environmental spin of this form. And notably, the systems in the environment are not interacting with one another. Okay. If n is sufficiently large, or if the environment is of a reasonable size, then as long as the coupling constants g sub I are different, the system will exhibit decoherence. So an initial product state size 0, which is this is psi 0 cross psi s cross psi e product state, unentangled, will evolve toward an entangled state psi sub t psi of t of this form. And after a sufficient amount of time has passed, we can expect that because of the interference of the different spins due to the fact that the GI are all different, the inner product of E plus and E minus approaches 0, and the reduced density matrix of the subsystem psi s is essentially diagonalized in the plus z minus z basis. So the fact that the initially pure row evolves toward a convex combination of projections onto the preferred pointer states is an example of what Zurich and Paz are calling Ein selection, or environment-introduced superselection. And as a handy reference, this is what it looks like on the Bloch sphere of the central qubit. So just as a reminder to people who don't spend all their time in quantum information, the surface of the sphere corresponds to the various pure states of the central qubit, and the interior of the sphere is the points in the interior are mixtures of pure states. The idea here is that under this interaction, all these pure states inevitably head in toward this region in the center, toward the z-axis. Well, they don't head toward the center, they head toward the z-axis. And thus, if an initial density that's on the outside is going to converge and stabilize roughly in this region here. Okay. So this, if you look at it in the right way, looks like a kind of superselection. What it's doing is it's not exactly ruling out superpositions of states on the boundary, which are these are general pure states, but it's saying that they're very unstable and they don't survive the interaction. Okay, what is quasi-classicality? Quasi-classicality has to do with stability and predictability. The precise characterization of this, I think, both is and should be a bone of contention, and I think, if nothing else, this talk might convince you of that. All right, so I've tried to give a characterization which roughly coincides with the use of the term classicality and the term quasi-classicality in the context of open system decoherence, and also in discussions of the emergence of quasi-classicality in cosmology. So it has to do with stability and predictability. The pure state in our example, plus z is stable, and so is minus z, and so are incoherent mixtures of the two. They're roughly stable modulo Poincaré recurrences. The qualification quasi and quasi-classical is just an acknowledgement that mixtures of stable states are not obviously classical because they're mixtures, right? This is just the outcome problem again, right? To say that a system is classical arguably means that it has a definite position, for instance, not that it has, that a single system is in some sort of classical distribution of positions. So I'm using quasi-classical rather than classical, so as not to raise an additional question. So the question here, which is, you can ask, okay, is Schrodinger's cat quasi-classical simpliciter, or does its quasi-classicality status depend on its state? So for our purposes, the purposes I'm interested in, I want to say that it's quasi-classical whenever its state is well approximated by a mixture of stable states, the preferred pointer states, but not if it's in a coherent superposition thereof. So I want to say that decoherence takes a cat, which is in a superposition of dead and alive, and renders it quasi-classical over a short time period when this pure state becomes a mixture. Okay. The other way of speaking, which is useful to keep in mind if you try to make sense of the literature, is you can label a system quasi-classical independently of whether or not it's in a superposition of pointer states or not. Okay. In that way of looking at things, the cat is a quasi-classical system in that it's these pure states do not survive long enough to measure them. It's a more operational way of characterizing classicality. I want to tie quasi-classicality a little bit closer to the system with the idea that we're interested in explaining the emergence of classicality in part as a dynamical process. Okay, that systems can become classical. Okay. So the question here that I want to ask in the rest of the talk is, are arbitrary states quasi-classical? And if so, is this explained by decoherence? So consider a Hilbert space H written as a product constituent Hilbert space as a bunch of subsystems H1 through HK. So I'm just supposing that there's this decomposition of the Hilbert space, and this is how it's via this decomposition that we identify subsystems. Suppose we're interested in the behavior of a particular subsystem, HS, which we'll just say is identified with H1, perhaps because S is the sort of subsystem which, by dint of its properties, its intrinsic properties, its mass, its charge, and its interaction with other subsystems, is a candidate for decoherence and ion selection. What, if anything, can we say about the properties of S, given an arbitrary pure state psi on the whole Hilbert space? Okay. More precisely, suppose we consider the uniform distribution of states on H. So all the uniform distribution of pure states on the large Hilbert space, given by the density matrix capital omega, which I've written down right there. Consider that and ask about the properties of the reduced density matrices, rho sub s, of subsystems s of dimension much smaller than n. So we're assuming, we're assuming that k is a large number. Okay, rho is a pure state here. This row is just the pure state selected from the uniform ensemble on the whole Hilbert space. So we want to take a pure state and then say, okay, what does this pure state, what can I say about, what are the properties of subsystem S in this pure state? That's what we're doing. Maybe we can't say anything. Maybe there's nothing interesting you could say about an arbitrary subsystem. But that's not the case. So Popescu et al. Used Levy's lemma. This is a paper from 2006. It's maybe, they use Levy's lemma for a different, slightly different purpose, but they show that for the vast majority of states, subsystem states, rho s, the subsystem state is nearly indistinguishable from the ensemble average for that subsystem. So take a particular one, it's going to be damn close to the average ensemble, okay? What they do is they have a formula D, which gives quantifies the distinguishability of two density matrices, this, and they discover a bound on the average discriminability of rho s and the ensemble average for s, given by this. So if n is very large compared to m, this is obviously a small number. And since d is by definition always positive, we can infer from the smallness of the average distinguishability that for the vast majority of subsystem density matrices, rho sub s, the distinguishability is of the individual state is small as well. And symmetry of the rotational symmetry of the uniform distribution guarantees symmetry of the distribution variant rho of density matrices, rho sub s. All right, this will become, if this isn't crystal clear, it should become clear in a moment. Okay, so as long as the dimension m of a subsystem is much smaller than the total Hilbert space dimension n, then for almost all states, rho of the total system, of the universe, if you will, the properties of a subsystem s will be essentially indistinguishable from the ensemble average. And since omega is a multiple of the identity, so too is the omega for the subsystem, which means that almost all small subsystems are, this is the core of it, are indistinguishable from a maximally mixed state, which is in turn to say that they behave randomly with respect to any choice of observable. And then, for example, the distribution on the Bloch sphere of a single qubit in a system with n other qubits has this form. So this r here is this the distance from the center of the Bloch sphere. It goes from 0 to 1. And I plotted this. Well, most of you probably know what this looks like. So for n equals 8, so 8 environmental qubits, you get this curve. I have not properly... These peak differently because I haven't normalized these distributions. For 12 qubits, this. So already for 8 and then even more so for 12, you can see that the density of states is getting piled up right near the origin. All right, and then if the universe has 10 to the 79th qubits, this distribution is essentially a single point at the origin. And if the universe is infinite, then the distribution has measure zero everywhere except at the origin. Oh, I'm sorry, yeah. This is, right, so this is the density of states on the Bloch sphere. So this is the set, R equals zero is the center of the sphere. This would be a pure state, okay, out here. And the distribution is spherically symmetric, so I only need this one parameter. I don't need X, Y, and Z, okay? You know, the likelihood of a pure state is, well, I can't say less than nil, but basically nil. The states, the idea is you're picking an arbitrary state for a state from your whole ensemble, looking at a subsystem whose Hilbert space dimension is much smaller than the total Hilbert space dimension, and you're finding that pretty much always they're indistinguishable from maximally mixed states. Okay, so what about decoherence? This had nothing to do with dynamics, okay. The possibility of decoherence in Einstein selection might suggest that this distribution might evolve in such a way as to privilege a particular set of states. So right now, this is a completely spherically symmetric distribution. It's not squashed up on the z-axis. I mean, why would it be? That distribution applies to microscopic systems which don't undergo decoherence just as much as macroscopic systems which are decohering in the z-basis or some other basis. Okay, suppose that's the case. Then after some time, some finite decoherence time, t sub d, the density matrices which are just these, for the subsystem F have become significantly distinct on average from the maximally mixed state. This would imply that the average distinguishability could exceed the initial bound, which we derived before, this initial bound, but this is not the case. The Liouville theorem tells us that our initially uniform distribution omega will remain constant under the unitary evolution. Any unitary evolution, in fact, that's in some sense, where we got the distribution in the first place, because it's the Haar measure over un. In other words, the total distribution doesn't evolve at all. It's just, it's stationary. Since omega s is just the trace of that over the environment, omega s, the ensemble average for the subsystem stays the same. And we know that as in equation six, this is our original expression that we got from the Popescu paper, that the distinguishability between rho prime sub s and omega prime sub s is bounded by this. And since omega prime s sub s is just equal to omega of s, we can write this, which is to say that the bound on the average distinguishability of the subsystem from a maximally mixed state, the purely random state, is constant in time. So there's no evolution of the distribution toward a preferred basis. And this is a this is an easy copy, cut and paste job here, because these are the same, right? So this is the distribution on the block sphere at t equals zero, and this is the distribution at t equals td. So decoherence doesn't affect anything on the level of the ensemble. What it tells us is that a subsystem which is not in a mixture of pointer states will, with high probability, evolve towards such a mixture and remain in the neighborhood thereof for a long time. All right, so it does, for a system undergoing decoherence, if you find yourself out here, you will go in. But there will be another state coming out to fill in the distribution, so it's maintaining the stationarity of the distribution. So it's an interesting case of having a spherically symmetric distribution, which in the case of a system undergoing decoherence is maintained by a dynamics which is only cylindrically symmetrical, because the states are evolving. If this is the block sphere, the states are evolving in toward the z-axis and also out. Okay, they're moving along like this, but the spherical nature of the distribution is the same, is maintained. Okay, conclusion. I'm almost on time. what does this say about classicality? It's a little tricky. So there are sort of two ways of looking at it. These are our first two bullet points. If we randomly select a state of the universe, then virtually every subsystem, macroscopic or microscopic, will be maximally mixed, and this has nothing to do with decoherence. I mean, it couldn't, because we haven't specified any dynamics at all. That's just a function of the distribution. Almost all subsystems begin in and indefinitely remain in, that's the dynamics, a state which is essentially maximally mixed and which displays no preference for any particular basis. If the quasi-classicality of a subsystem means that its density matrix is more simply described in one basis rather than another, in other words, if your demand is that there be some sort of preferred basis emerge for that particular system, then virtually all subsystems of all universes defined on a given Hilbert space are not quasi-classical, because basically the center of the block sphere, or more generally a maximally mixed state, that displays no preference for any particular observables. On the other hand, you might say, fine, I don't care, you know, if there's a particular basis picked out. All I care about is that I'm stable in some basis of observables that I can regard as classical observables, like position, for instance. So that's option two here. On the other, if stability is with respect to some particular basis is sufficient for quasi-classicality, never mind the stability in other bases, then the almost maximally mixed states are quasi-classical, in which case almost all subsystems, microscopic and macroscopic, both are quasi-classical. And again, this has nothing to do in particular with decoherence. So for most universes, virtually all macroscopic and microscopic systems behave identically. And our universe is evidently one in which macroscopic systems are effectively classical and microscopic systems are not. Why? Let me conclude there.
And the substrate, particular feature S would be the one defined by an energy interval, or energy between E1 and E2.
Mm-hmm. Well, my conclusions there, I thought a little bit about this. Yes, they put it to a sort of a different use in trying to justify, the canonical distribution. For my purposes, I thought a little bit about this, what happens if I restrict, if I look just sort of at an energy surface. And I think, I haven't shown, but I'm pretty sure that you get the same type of conclusion, which is because most states, even states on an energy surface, are going to be highly entangled. And it's the entanglement of all these systems. The fact that an entangled system is much more generic than a non-entangled system, or a system with low entanglement, that gives rise to the fact that the individual subsystems are so random looking and display no real structure. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. You think that the subsystem, the individual subsystem is going to have a canonical distribution of energies if the ensemble does, that you're going to get that's going to be mirrored there.
If the interaction between the system and the environment is weak, mm-hmm. yes,
I don't know. I need to look at that. I understand what you're, I think. So your point is that you can get a special state if you take in the, if you want to look at the sort of the stationary states of this distribution, right, this canonical ensemble. That's the idea? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
How can the distributed state discover the not the coherence will not help us getting our level? Now if your theorem is from random information, the periodic system, they all interact, and then the subsystem is a complete picture. If you have a complete picture, nothing happens. Our world, our universe, is not a fixed picture. It's a pure state. In a pure state, the subsystem here in the world also not completely needs to take under the limit itself. And then everything works. This assumption that everything is happening. This is what makes
Well, that's No, well, Lev, right, I didn't. I think I know what you mean. I mean, I am starting with a pure state of the whole universe. I'm not starting with pure states. I am starting with, in general, subsystems which are entangled in the context of this universal pure state. Let me just say something. Can I talk for a minute? Okay. just because we don't have too much time. I understand what you're saying, but I think that the puzzle there is why in a universe that's so old, which has been interacting forever, the related question you can ask in the context you're offering is how do you get pure states in the first place? So how does a subsystem become effectively pure? That's the question, okay? So it's a question really which has to do more with, from one perspective, with state preparation and and state preparation as post-selection. How do you prepare a pure state, given that you're interacting with a state to a system to prepare it? What gives rise to the pure state? So in other words, you can't, if you start at t equals zero with a subsystem which is in a product state with its environment, you evolve it forward, it becomes entangled with the environment. If you evolve it backward, it becomes entangled with the environment. And then it looks like it's gonna, it can look like that it requires a conspiracy on the part of the environment to generate, to get the phases lined up in such a way as to generate the pure state of the subsystem. All right. We're not going to resolve this right now. Yeah. Thank you.